Major support for Louisiana Eats on WWNO provided by Zatarain's, proud producers of authentic New Orleans-style cuisine. Zatarain's, a New Orleans tradition since 1889.
From WWNO New Orleans, this is Louisiana Eats. I'm Poppy Tooker. On this week's show, we're celebrating Halloween with ghost whisperer Marianne Winkowski. Often, the spirits she communicates with have recipes to share. And wait till you hear where she believes we have a ghost lurking here in the WWNO studios. And speaking of ghosts, I'll introduce you to this week's culinary heritage hero, New Orleans' first rock star chef who popularized the meal we now call brunch, and whose recipes give us a glimpse into the 19th century restaurant kitchen. It's all treats with no tricks on this week's Louisiana Eats. Marianne Winkowski is a church-going housewife and mother of two who lives in a typical American suburb in Ohio. Marianne also has the ability to see and speak with ghosts. It might surprise you to learn that one of the things these earthbound spirits want to share with her are their recipes. Marianne, welcome to Louisiana Eats.
Well, thank you for having me.
Tell us, how did you discover that you could communicate with spirits?
I was 7 in Catholic school, first grade, and that's when I found out nobody else could do it.
And so what did you see? What happened?
Back then they used to call them lavatories, not bathrooms.
Yes, I'm a Catholic school girl too, mm-hmm. so I recall.
So it was lavatory break, and we had come, and we had to be very quiet because we were the little ones. It was in the middle of the morning, and we're walking back 2 by 2 down the hallway, and I glanced back and saw one of my little friends, and she had this very, he was like a creepy-looking guy standing behind her. He was missing a couple teeth. He almost looked like a hobo. And I said, sister, it was my turn at the door. I said, sister, I says, there's a man standing by Susie, and I don't like the way he looks. And she looked down at me and tapped the top of my head. And she says, oh, Marianne, that's just her guardian angel.
Oh,
yes.
Okay.
So we go back into the classroom, and we're sitting down. And again, anybody that's gone to Catholic school, grade school, there are beautiful pictures on the wall of guardian angels,
yes,
with wings and halos holding children who are always blue-eyed and blonde. I never understood that part because I am the exact opposite. But at any rate, so I'm thinking, well, he doesn't look like a guardian angel. I don't think I ever saw anything that looked like that. And I'm thinking about all this. And, I thought, when I go home, I have to call Grandma and ask her about this. Well, I'm 7. I forgot. And it was about 3 weeks later, and we're out in the playground for a recess, and oh my gosh, that man was back behind my little girlfriend again. And I thought, oh no, I forgot to call Grandma. And so I look around to see which nun is guarding us, and it was the same nun that had told me it was a guardian angel.
Mm.
I'm thinking to myself, she better not tell me that's a guardian angel. So I get by her, and I said, sister, I says, that man is back behind Susie again. And she looks down at me, and she looks to where Susie's at. And I probably would have been okay, but at that point, I stomped my saddle shoe on the ground.
Uh-huh.
And I said, don't tell me that's a guardian angel. Oh, my goodness. She was bypassing the principal, sending me right to the priest. I wasn't going to make my first communion next year. Oh, golly. It was really bad. So I came home that day, and I remembered, and I called my grandmother, and she says, well, Marianne, not everybody can do it. You got to be quiet. You can't tell anybody. You have to keep it a secret. You'll get your mom and dad in trouble. And that's what I did. I was married to my wonderful husband for over 2 years before I told him I could do it.
So your grandmother had her own personal experience with this, and that's how she knew what was going
on. Grandma had the ability that if some Paisan or Goomba died over in the old country in Italy, she could talk to him. And 60, 70 years ago, her little claim to fame was if somebody died over in the old country, she'd dream about him that night. She'd get up in the morning. She'd go across the street and she'd say, Rose, your brother Luigi died last night. Well, when I was there at her house, my mother went to the hospital to have my sister Diane, and it wasn't a drive-through for ladies back then. You stayed in the hospital for a week, and husbands didn't get off from work. And so on the way to the hospital, they dropped me off at Grandma's house. Well, that week, somebody died over in Italy. And just one morning, I got up, and Grandma fed me breakfast, and I went off into the sunroom to play. And so she hears me talking my heart out in Italian to somebody in this little sunroom. And she's standing in the doorway, and of course, she doesn't see anybody. But she's listening, and she thought, uh-oh, Marianne's pretty smart. She overheard me telling Pa, Grandpa, who died, and that's what she's talking about. So she says, Marianne, who are you talking to? I told her. She says, where is he? And I pointed to him. She says, well, ask him this and ask him that. And I'm 2 years old. How do I know these things? So she realized I could see and talk to him when I was awake. That's why she started taking me to funerals when I was 4 years old.
Okay.
Yeah.
So tell me the difference between earthbound spirits and those who have crossed over.
Okay. Psychic mediums are the people that have the ability to talk to spirits that have gone into the light and crossed over. People like James Van Praagh, Jen Edwards, people like that. They're the ones that can communicate and talk to them. I cannot see anybody that's gone to the light. I see the ones that made the choice after they died not to go into the light.
Ah, so they're the ones still hanging around.
Exactly, and those are the ones that cause problems in people's houses. They don't eat or sleep, but they need human energy to keep going. So they're the ones that, like to make problems in houses so people get stressed out or scared or aggravated or tired, and that's where they get their energy from.
And these earthbound ghosts require a great deal of energy. How do they access that?
Well, they're a total energy drain. I almost like to say that they are energy vampires. They just suck the energy out of you. And if they can get you to fight with your spouse or the kids, siblings fight. That's their job. But some kids take it to a higher level, okay?
Uh-huh.
If they can get the kids to do that. If you've got children in the house under the age of 10 or 12, these kids are going to constantly have ear, nose, throat, upper respiratory problems. Adults, totally unexplained headaches when you're home, maybe lower intestinal problems. I do more houses with divorce because of earthbound spirits than anything else.
Now, aside from in houses, you find them congregating in other places as well, don't you?
They are going to be anywhere where there is a crowd of people. Malls, theaters, stadiums. Any place where there are a lot of people hanging out, you're going to have earthbound spirits. Cemeteries? No. Everybody in the cemetery is dead. Ghosts don't hang out in cemeteries. They're all over the groceries, airplanes.
What about restaurants?
Oh, yes, restaurants. Absolutely.
What have you seen in restaurants?
My husband and I were sitting close to the little room where they walk in where they would get soup or the coffee for the patrons, okay?
Uh-huh.
There was a refrigerator type thing in there that you could slide the door to get creamers out and that kind of stuff.
Yes.
So every time one of the waitresses would go in there and get something, they would close the door, but this woman ghost would crack it open about 2 inches. And every time the manager would come by, whoever was closest, I told you to keep that door closed. What's wrong with you? And the looks on these poor waitstaff's faces was, I must be cracking up. And so finally, you know when you want to catch a waitress's eye at a restaurant, how you stare at them?
Yeah.
Well, I finally started staring at this ghost. And she looked at me, and I winked at her. And then she really looked at me. And I just looked at her, and I said, knock it off. And she finally went in a different side of the restaurant where I couldn't see her.
So ghosts can actually move objects. And,
yeah.
You know, in the New Orleans French Quarter, I don't even have to tell you the spirit stories we have. Down at Muriel's restaurant in the bar, they have reports all the time of a glass being flung across the room and banging and shattering against the brick wall.
Oh, gosh.
You see a lot of violent things like that?
They can definitely do stuff. And they're always going to be more active and have more energy to do that the week working up to a full moon. Let's say this coming Saturday is a full moon, which it is not, but let's pretend it is.
Yeah.
Last Saturday, they would have had a little bit more energy. Sunday, a little bit more. Monday, a little bit more. Tuesday, a little bit more. Until Saturday. It's like feeding time at the zoo. They could move jewelry. They can move remotes. They could move garage door openers, coffee cups, bills, money, keys.
Well, you know, it makes perfect sense because I've worked in restaurants, and anybody who works in restaurants and bars knows that when it's a full moon, it's going to be a wild time.
Well, that and some of these ghosts that are in places like that are restaurant ghosts. They just hang out there all the time. But maybe one of the customers or the patrons that are coming in has one attached to them and is coming in with them.
Hmm.
I mean, you know, it's TV, it's the movies. You had to die in the property. You had to own the house. But they could go anywhere they want. Who's going to tell them they can't?
Come back from a short break. Ghost whisperer Marianne Winkowski reveals where a ghostly presence is lurking right here in our WWNO studios. Stay tuned. I'm Poppy Tooker, and you're listening to Louisiana Eats, edible content for Louisiana food lovers. Louisiana Eats is brought to you with major support from Popeye's Louisiana Kitchen and Zatarain's. If you're just joining us, we've been talking with Marianne Winkowski, author of Beyond Delicious, Recipes from the Dearly Departed. Because of Marianne's abilities to communicate with earthbound spirits, I couldn't resist testing her capability while I had her on the phone. Well, let me ask you this. I was pretty fascinated when I learned that you are also capable of detecting ghosts over the phone.
Yes.
So I was wondering, by any chance, do you detect anybody hanging around the WWNO studio with us?
Okay. There is a woman, and she's in, like, a kitchen area. Actually, why do you have two coffee pots in there?
I don't know.
Okay. But she's by the coffee pots.
Okay. What does she look like?
She's not very old. She's probably only about 45 years old. And from the way she's dressed, I would say she died maybe early 90s.
Wow, that's fair. Well, I'll have to do some detecting on that because the station's been here for about 40 years, so goodness knows who could be lurking.
Mm-hmm. And like I said, and she could belong to somebody that works there, comes to work with them every day.
You know, after all, the name of this show is Louisiana Eats, and so we have to get around to talking about recipes. And I wanted to ask you, when did you get your first recipe from a ghost?
Years ago. I got invited to a house of a lady that lived alone, an older woman. Her husband had died, and she called me. It was right after Thanksgiving, but before Christmas. That's the time where everybody does their Christmas baking.
Oh, yes.
And so I walked in, and it was a little bungalow, and as soon as she opened the door and invited me in, oh, it smelled so good in that house. Well, here when I walked up to the kitchen, there on the cooling racks were nut rolls.
Mm-hmm.
So we go into the dining room and we sit down. And I have learned over many, many years to be very aware of what I say. Okay.
Yes.
And so I said, oh, my gosh, I said, your nut rolls smell so good. And the ghost, it was a woman standing there. And she says, oh, yeah, they smell good. She says, but they taste terrible.
Oh.
She said she has no idea how to make a nut roll. And I have to admit, when I walked past them, I looked. They were not nice and rolled tight. They were sort of pancaking looking, you know,
uh-huh.
spread out. And as I walked by, I thought to myself, well, she doesn't know how to roll a nut roll or she's using too much butter.
Mm-hmm.
That's what I figured. So we sat down, and I'm just glaring at this ghost to just, be careful. Just watch it. So I'm talking to the woman, and she's a very nice older lady. She says, oh, I give them to the priest. I give them to everybody in the neighborhood. She says, I just love making them for people. And I says, well, that's very nice. Now, this ghost's mouth is going off, and she's going, she's not a bad cook. Her meatloaf looks pretty good, but she can't bake for a tinker's dam. And I said, oh, no. And so we get all done, and I said to the woman, are you ready to let me let her go? And she did not know this lady. Which is the case in most houses. You do not know the ghost that's in your house. Your own relative wouldn't do this to you.
I see.
And so the woman said, oh, yes, is she going to go to heaven? I says, well, I'm going to make the white light and let her walk into it. That's my plan for her to go to heaven. So the ghost looks at me and she says, get a pencil and paper. I'm going to give her my nut roll recipe. I have a better nut roll recipe than hers. And I'm going, oh, okay. So I says, can I have paper and pencil? So she hurry up and she got me paper and pencil and I scribbled down this recipe. And then she also told me a hint on how to tell her how to roll it,
uh-huh.
rolling it out on cloth and then using the cloth, which is a pretty good clue. I'd never heard of that before. So at any rate, I said, now, how am I going to tell this poor lady that her nut rolls are really cruddy? And so I get all done, and I release the woman, and the lady that owns the house says, what did you write down? I said, well, this woman was so happy that you had me here to release her that she gave you her secret nut roll recipe. Would you like it? And so she goes, oh, yeah. So I rewrote it nice, and I threw that scrap in my case. Over the years, I just accumulated tons of these like that. But the funny part with this particular story was, between Christmas and New Year's, this lady calls me, and she says to me, that recipe that that ghost lady gave me, was it like a secret, secret recipe? I said, why? She goes, everybody's asking me for that recipe. She says, nobody ever asked for my recipe. I thought, oh.
Well, that is one of the recipes in your book, Beyond Delicious, The Ghost Whisperer's Cookbook. And you've got over 100 recipes in there from the dearly departed. And what I really loved about it was that each recipe has its own personal ghost story that relates to how you came to get that recipe. How'd you get the idea for the book?
It was actually a bookseller that gave me the idea for it. We were at an event, and he was sitting next to me with my books that people were buying, and I was, you know, autographing. And somebody came up to me and said, my grandmother died. Can you contact her? Because she had the best recipe for some cookie. She died telling it to nobody. Standard response was, I'm sorry, I don't know how to call a ghost, and I can't talk to anybody that's crossed over. I says, you know, I've got boxes full of recipes from ghosts. I says, you know, maybe the cookie recipe's in there. I says, one of these days I'll have to put it together. And this bookseller's next to me. He goes, you have recipes from ghosts? I says, oh, boxes full. And, you know, ghosts try to be very helpful, but unfortunately most people can't understand them or hear them, and so they have to find somebody like me that can actually talk to them and get the recipe. Plus the fact, don't we all know somebody that died, or when they give you a recipe, they just change one little thing so it's never the right recipe?
I've always wondered about that. You know, yes. I thought that was the evil grandmother who did that.
You know, I think it's the adoration that they think because nobody can do it like they do it. But sometimes the guilt of not giving out that recipe is one of the reasons why they stick around. So that could be as simple as unfinished business of why they didn't cross over, because they didn't tell somebody a correct recipe.
And would you tell us how it is that you create this light to make these earthbound spirits move on?
Sure. The bright white light that I create, I explained it to my grandmother when I was about 8 years old, that every funeral that she took me to, everybody was standing there with this really bright white light around them. And that whenever she took me someplace where there was an earthbound spirit and they had been dead for a while, there was no bright white light around them.
Mm.
And so I explained that to her, and she just listened. And it was a few weeks later, and she took me outside. The sun was setting, and she said, look at that sun. And, you know, I said, okay. And she said, is that what the bright white light looks like? And I said, no, it's brighter than that. She says, well, that's the best we're going to do, make that light on the side of the garage. And it took me a very long time to visually picture the light and then keep it open long enough for somebody to walk into and make it big enough for somebody to walk into.
Mm. Well, Marianne, on behalf of myself and all the Louisiana Eats listeners, I want to wish you and all of your ghostly friends a very happy Halloween.
Well, thank you so much. And please get a little spooky, but stay safe.
Marianne Winkowski and the Ghost Whisperers Cookbook.
Well, I ain't superstitious, but a black cat I've crossed my trail. Oh, I'm not superstitious, black cat I've crossed my trail. Don't sweep me with no broom, I just might get put in.
And now it's time for our Louisiana Eats Culinary Quiz Question of the Week, brought to you with support from French Market Coffee. The correct answer to last week's question, what is the Cajun name for the annual Southwest Louisiana Fall Hog Butchering event, is the Boucherie. In the days before refrigeration, families would take turn hosting hog butchering, dividing the meat amongst them. Much of it was then heavily smoked to preserve for use during the winter months. The skin was fried in great bubbling cast iron cauldrons to a crunchy goodness that is a boucherie staple. Today's boucheries are more parties than a necessary part of life. The little Louisiana town of Sorrento holds a fall boucherie festival. The St. Martinville Boucherie takes place annually just before Mardi Gras. Now, let's see who this week's lucky winner is. Thomas Walsh, our Louisiana Eats producer, is manning the grinder.
Well, this week's winner is a native of Dusson, Louisiana, a tiny town on the outskirts of Lafayette. And although she can remember her parents talking about boucheries years ago, she was too squeamish to attend one until this past spring. So congratulations to Miranda Romero of Doosan, Louisiana, for not only winning our prize, but for embracing her local heritage.
Our lucky winner will be receiving 3 full-size bags of French Market coffee, including dark roast with chicory, and French roast. This week's question is, what is the native green and white striped gourd with the taste of a sweet potato that is our Louisiana pumpkin? Send your answers to Louisiana Eats at WWNO.org by midnight Sunday night. All correct answers received will be mixed together in our French Market coffee grinder, and one lucky winner will be chosen at random and announced on next week's show. Again, this week's question is, what is the native green and white striped gourd with the taste of sweet potato that is our Louisiana pumpkin? Email those answers by midnight Sunday night to Louisiana Eats at WWNO.org with culinary quiz in the subject line, and you could be next week's lucky winner. I'm Poppy Tooker, and you're listening to Louisiana Eats. Absinthe was the drink of choice amongst artists and authors of the 19th century. Because of the chartreuse color of the liquor itself, partaking of the highly alcoholic beverage was sometimes called chasing the green fairy. Pernod brand ambassador Anne-Louise Marquis sat down with us to talk history and taste profile of the once illegal drink. First of all, explain the difference between the Pernod that we are all familiar with and Pernod Absinthe.
So Pernod is a pastis. Pastis came about once absinthe was banned.
What is a pastis?
A pastis is a lighter alcohol than absinthe. So absinthe is a 68% ABV. So it's a double proof spirit.
Alcohol by volume. Is that what that stands for?
Yes, exactly. So it's a 136 proof. It's very, very hot.
Wow.
So what happened when absinthe was banned was that the French really loved that anise flavor. So they needed to find a solution to keep feeding the masses. So they created pastis, which is without the wormwood, which is the controversial ingredient in absinthe. It's also a much lower ABV, and it also has sugar and water added. So it's much lighter.
So what about that wormwood?
So I think the biggest misconception, or one of the biggest misconceptions about absinthe, is that wormwood is a wood that has been eaten by worms.
No.
Not at all true. Not at all true. It's a beautiful verdant green plant. Grows all over Europe. It grows all over a lot of places in the world. It's been used as far back as ancient Rome and ancient Greece as a medicinal plant. It's extremely bitter. It's used as a digestive and also a curative for various women's issues.
What would the different uses for the two different products be?
Pernod pastis, you want to drink as a pastis. You add water. You drink it on a hot summer day. It's very Sud de France, very south of France, Paris. Every cafe in Paris has Pernod pastis. Pernod absinthe has only been on the market 5 years. It's much different. It's primarily right now used as a rinse, traditionally in a Sazerac or a Corpse Survivor number 2. But my job is to get people using it as a primary spirit.
Well, the Corpse Reviver and the Sazerac are very distinctly New Orleans drinks.
Absolutely.
Elsewhere in the world, are there other cocktails that either of the liquors are specifically used for?
There's not a lot of drinks that are... The base spirit is absinthe right now. There's a few very traditional and very New Orleans cocktails. In France, it's not a big cocktail scene. They really drink things like absinthe, sugar, water.
Mm.
America really, since the 1800s, has been championing the cocktail movement. My thing that I'm excited about is the tiki movement. And
the tiki cocktails.
And there's a lot of cocktails with tiki cocktails with absinthe in them.
Like what?
My favorite tiki cocktail right now is the Reposado Zombie. It's a full ounce of Reposado tequila and a full ounce of Pernod Absinthe. It's a tiki drink. There's orgeat, there's lime, there's simple, there's a dozen other delicious ingredients that make a really amazing cocktail.
It was banned in 1912, and tell me a little bit about that.
Unfortunately, it was banned in the U.S. in 1912. They passed a law that said they would not allow spirits or products that were deleterious to human health.
And yet, prohibition ended, but absinthe didn't come back. It remained illegal?
It remained illegal because of a misunderstanding about the contents of absinthe. There was a misunderstanding about thujone, which is the principal ingredient in wormwood. Thujone was definitely villainized. It was definitely said to be, and in large quantities, it is absolutely a neurotoxin. But there's more thujone in three leaves of sage than there is in an entire bottle of Pernod absinthe.
Really?
Yeah. So,
my goodness, yeah. The turkey is a dangerous thing then, isn't it?
So what happened was that the lawmakers didn't understand how much thujone was in absinthe, actually.
Uh-huh.
So there was a lot of work. Once absinthe went out, people forgot about it. They forgot what it was. And in this new cocktail renaissance, they wanted to bring it back because it's such a principal ingredient in so many classic cocktails, especially New Orleans cocktails.
Well, we never forgot about it here because we need it in our Oysters Rockefeller.
You do. So they... a lot of people did some really hard work doing the science behind it, convincing the legislators that it was actually always legal to serve absinthe because the thujone levels were never that high. And luckily, in 2007, they were able to bring absinthe back into the U.S., and we've had this new absinthe renaissance along with all the cocktails that have been created.
How did it get that bad reputation?
There's a few things that happened around the turn of the century that didn't help to serve absinthe. Partly, the wine lobby was moving to push against absinthe. They didn't want people drinking absinthe. They wanted people drinking wine. So they started rumors. There was a doctor who was doing research on lab rats, and uh-huh. He did these studies, and he came to the conclusion that absinthe was deleterious to human health. That it made you hallucinate, that it made you crazy.
Because of the way the rats acted?
Exactly. and he was later disproved time and time again that none of that was true. But at the time, everyone was listening to the scientific doctor who was just anti-absinthe.
So it's the wine lobby.
Right.
Was that because absinthe was one of the first hard liquors?
So there was a big wine blight that happened. So people stopped drinking wine because there wasn't any. So they needed something else to drink. So they started drinking absinthe.
It was the phylloxera thing.
Exactly. And what happened was because it was so popular, it was popular with the army, it was popular with upper classes, and like anything that's popular, it got dispelled into all the classes. Everyone was drinking absinthe. And there was a lot of poor copies of Pernod that were made that were in fact very bad. And
of Pernod absinthe.
Of Pernod absinthe. Because Pernod absinthe is double proof, people didn't know how to drink it. So they were drinking too much too quickly, and it was causing some problems.
And Louise, mm-hmm. Would you walk us through the correct way to drink absinthe? It's actually a bit of a ritual, isn't it?
There's an absolute ritual to it. You want to place about an ounce of Pernod absinthe in a glass. And you're going to set a slotted spoon. There's some beautiful spoons, little holes in it. You're going to set that over the top of the glass with a sugar cube. And then you'll drip water from an ice-cold fountain through the sugar cube and into the glass. And that's the traditional way to serve it. You want to get about one part absinthe to four parts water.
Where did the green fairy thing come from?
Well, there's a couple of different things. Because absinthe started as a medicine, they started calling it the green fairy in the Swiss Alps. This Dr. Ordinaire would travel around on his little horse.
And Dr. Ordinaire was actually the first person to sell absinthe.
Exactly. He was the first one to kind of codify the recipe and sell it as a medicine. It was so powerful, it was so strong, and it worked so well for people. They called it the little green fairy. It also became known as the inspiration for artists and writers in Paris. The green fairy was an inspiration to them to create works of art.
Why was Pernod absinthe so popular with Parisians?
So Pernod absinthe has an incredible history, starting from the Swiss Alps down into France, across the river and into France. It was popularized by the French army, who took it with them when they went on the wars to the Middle East, and because it's an anti-malarial. So when they came back heroes, everyone was so in love with the army and so sort of transfixed and obsessed with them that they were the celebrities of their time. Everyone wanted to drink what they drank. So in that time, the green hour was developed, the time between about 5 and 7 o'clock on the boulevards in Paris. Everyone would gather in these beautiful cafes, and everyone would drink Pernod absinthe.
Let's go back to the whole prohibition of absinthe mm-hmm. and how that came about. Now,
sure.
I was fascinated to learn that it was actually, of course, 100 years ago, that this ban occurred.
Yes.
And now you've explained to us that it had to do with this doctor and his lab rats. Why did it take 95 years to get the ban lifted?
There was just a misunderstanding. There was a general public misinformation campaign that was so effective and so strong that people didn't know about absinthe. They weren't educated. Even today, I have people ask me if it's hallucinogenic, if it'll make them crazy. But the absinthe I'm serving today is the same absinthe we were serving 100 years ago. It just took a huge push and a huge campaign by several very influential people to make it go through the legislature.
It seems to me that prior to the ban being lifted, I had found online some other absinthes that were coming from Eastern Europe. So were they doing something over there? What was that about?
The Czech Republic was the first to bring absinthe back, absolutely. They were the first ones to develop a new absinthe. And they're the ones you'll see lighting it on fire, which is something we would never, ever do with Pernod absinthe. It's a perfectly good way to ruin a lovely glass of absinthe, still light it on fire. But I do have to credit the Czech Republic with bringing it back and making it popular again.
Well, I really want to thank you so much for taking the time to have this chat with us on Louisiana Eats.
And thank you.
Here's to the return of the absinthe.
Yes, I'm very excited about it.
Anne Louise Marquis and the original Pernod absinthe. After the next short break, I'll introduce you to this week's Louisiana Eats Culinary Heritage Hero, who's having a cookbook launch this week, even though she's been dead since 1906. Don't go anywhere. Tooker, and you're listening to Louisiana Eats, edible content for Louisiana food lovers. Louisiana Eats is made possible with major support from French Market Coffee and Rouse's Markets. Louisiana Eats culinary heritage heroes are farmers, fishers, chefs, and food producers who bring an authentic taste of our state's heritage to the world's tables. This week's culinary heritage hero was just 22 years old when she came to New Orleans from Germany in 1853 to join her brother, who worked as a butcher in the New Orleans French Market. She married a Mr. Dutrille, who had worked as a butcher but owned a coffee shop across the street from the market, where she began to serve her brothers and his butcher friends a big late morning meal. After Mr. Dutrille's death, this thoroughly modern woman married the bartender, a man 8 years her junior, who with her continued to operate what had now become a well-known restaurant. By the time of the Cotton Exposition in 1884 and 5, our culinary heritage hero was the number one tourist attraction in New Orleans. Visitors wrote months in advance for reservations. In 1900, the Southern Pacific Railroad persuaded her to share her recipes, which were published in a book intended to be more of a tourist guide than an actual cookbook. Her 1906 death was national news. The Times-Picayune called her the Queen of Culinary Arts, and the New York, Chicago, and Dallas papers all noted her passing as well. This week's Culinary Heritage Hero, brought to you with support from Popeye's Louisiana Kitchen, is Madame Elizabeth Begay, who originated Breakfast at Begay's, the late morning meal we all now call brunch. I spent this past summer taking cooking classes from the 19th century ghost of Madame Begay, and Pelican Publishing is reprinting Madame's cookbook this fall with both her original recipes and my 21st century revisions. I'm Poppy Tooker, and Breakfast at Begay's is real Louisiana Eats. century New Orleans, every Sunday in Congo Square, the enslaved and free people of color from West Africa would gather. Drumming, dancing, and trading native wares, this was their spiritual center in the New World. Today, Congo Square is known as Armstrong Park. Just across Rampart Street from this historic, sacred ground is the Voodoo Spiritual Temple, where priestess Miriam Chimani practices the ancient rituals of the ancestors. Many of these rituals include a culinary staple, herbs. Priestess Miriam is here to talk with us about voodoo and food. Miriam, welcome to Louisiana Eats.
Wow, thank you for having me. It's always wonderful when you call, and then it's like magic.
Can you explain for us the spiritual nature of herbs?
Well, the spiritual nature of herbs is what made the people have something natural to rely on when there were discomfort in their life, health, and the environment, and for fumigation, for having some aroma to eradicate the unsettled energy that the peoples of the 1800 was going through. And equally today, people need them for their emotional stresses.
Actually, herbs have been used since the dawn of time as medicine.
Of course, and especially, it was like today, it's like an over-counter medicine. And that day, it was like the true natural pharmaceutical. It was what was all natural.
What are some of the herbs that you use, and what do you use them for?
Well, the herbs I use come in many multiple choices, but I do have today, according to the different order or the different ideas that is taking place at the time, whether it's people's health or their love life problems. And over the years, looking at the magical expression of the African peoples who practice what we call voodoo, or managing their life, their luck, and finding something to improve their fortune. So I have, for love life, which is sometimes top over the health.
For many people, you're right, that comes first.
So it's amazing. You can use right out of your kitchen. There is jasmine. You can have lavender or cinnamon. Ginger is a big herb that can be used to improve or empower your love.
Well, I guess ginger and cinnamon in particular are sort of hot herbs, so that might spice the love
life
up.
If there's sort of low lethargic energy, you feel like something has gone weak in your emotional structure of yourself and your partner, and so you just take a little cinnamon sometime and put it on the stove before your husband get home, and poof!
What about luck and money? What would you use?
Oh, luck and money, and many people's walk with the John the Conqueror root in their pocket. And along with many other herbs, they have a lovish root. And I was in Georgia, and they call it the bohawk.
So if you were going to the casino, you'd put the John the Conqueror root in your pocket.
Exactly. And then many people are probably not familiar with the herb or root that's called devil shoestring.
What is that?
It's like a wood. It could come from the limb, but it also have like a vine that you can make your good luck hand. You can make your powerful lucky hand, and you can equally carry it with you for gambling or just carry it with you, even if you got to deal with court situation.
Are there any herbs that you would keep in your wallet?
Definite. Herbs that, you know, the clover, four-leaf, you can find you come across a four-leaf clover. That is said to keep your luck forever. And so it's good if you take it, and even you can put it on a dollar bill and fold it and hide it away in your wallet. But basil, there is a pfeiffer is used for helping to bring money and keep money in your pocket as well as when you're traveling. You know, you can put some comfrey in your luggage to protect your luggage from getting lost.
Oh, that's fantastic. And I bet it all smells good when you open it up when you get wherever you're going.
Definitely. It keeps your clothes fresh and then you know, it's just like moving the negative vibration. You just...
Are there any herbs that are tied to specific holiday celebrations?
Well, we know from story of the time when Jesus was moving through Jerusalem, the palm. And then also the hyssop is good for in holiday time.
Now, what is a mojo bag and why would someone need one?
Well, mojo bag is unique because it's remind you that you don't have to have fears or worries. It's something to remind you that you got your luck.
You got your mojo working.
Yeah.
Huh?
But many times people are not able to just project with their mind, but they need a little tool to carry with them to help them to arrive with some trust and security in their mind of achieving or what they want to achieve for their successes.
Well, Miriam, I see that you brought one of my favorite of your little bags with you to the studio today. What's in the bag you've got there?
Oh, it's like rattling those bones.
It's rattling those bones? Well, I was wondering if maybe you would rattle the bones for us and see how things are looking for us here at Louisiana Eats.
Just many times travelers will be going in and out of the villages and they want to get a sense of direction. What's up and what's ahead of us now, my brother? And the old African priest will be sitting there and he'd just be rattling his bones and he will, why don't you just sit down here with me for a moment? So that you can see your wits before you get farther on up the road. And then the African priest would just, my brother, I think you should delay for a moment and maybe just sleep over here with me through the night. And then when you rise in the morning, then your future look bright and you can go forward on your way.
So Miriam, tell us. Do you think we're on the right track here at Louisiana Eats?
I believe that you're on a very good wave of energy, and it's the time, and everything is coming now that we have reassembled, and restructuring of our life is a great deal. But what is the greatest of the deal? Food is the substance that made us feel very assured that we could stand up and make this restructuring be in a greater effective way.
And food is the thing that first brought us together, and how exciting that it's brought us back together
exactly.
Again. Miriam, thank you so much for coming in to share your time and your wisdom with us here today.
It is always a pleasure.
Priestess Miriam Chimani of New Orleans Voodoo Spiritual Temple. That's it for this week's edition of Louisiana Eats, edible content for Louisiana food lovers. Next week, we learn the secrets behind the authenticity of the restaurant kitchens in HBO's Treme. Subscribe to our podcast, hear today's show, or catch up on previous editions anytime online at wwno.org. Louisiana Eats is made possible with major support from French Market Coffee, Popeye's Louisiana Kitchen, Rouse's Markets, and Zatarain's. Additional support provided by Dickie Brennan and Company, Lightseekin' Funeral Homes, and our media sponsor, Louisiana Kitchen and Culture Magazine. Theme music by Johnny Sketch and the Dirty Notes, produced at Piety Street Recording. Thanks to producer and sound engineer Thomas Walsh, our editors Zoe Sullivan and Lane Kaplan-Levinson. I'm Poppy Tooker. We'll see you next time. Louisiana Eats is a production of WWNO.